Today, we're diving into one of the most intensive, high-stakes environments in modern medicine. We're talking about the critical care unit.
And specifically, patients fighting for their lives in what's called cardiogenic shock.
Right. If you or, somebody you know has been critically ill, this is where the raw power of technology just meets pure human resilience.
These are patients whose hearts have failed so severely that they often require this incredibly sophisticated high-tech life support. It's known as mechanical circulatory support, or MCS.
MCS, and we're talking about devices like ECMO, right?
Exactly. Extracorporeal membrane, oxygenation, ECMO, or various other short-term ventricular assist devices. I mean, these are literally machines keeping the patient alive.
And that really is our mission for this deep dive. We've got sources, primarily this really powerful scoping review that was just published. It focuses on the least documented, yet you could argue the most critical layer of care here, the role of the nurse.
It's so fascinating because, the technology, the shiny new MCS device and the physician who places it, they get most of the public spotlight.
Of course.
But our source material, it highlights this the significant paradox. The notes from the review make it absolutely clear that despite a recognized limited evidence base for what nurses should do specifically,
Limited evidence.
but the nurse is absolutely central to making sure that device functions correctly, that the monitoring is just flawless, and that these severe device-related complications are proactively prevented.
So that's the tension right there. You have this absolutely essential role, but this huge evidence gap surrounding it.
Exactly. It means a huge amount of this crucial moment-to-moment work is being done without the kind of formal standardized structure we see in other parts of critical care.
It seems like the entire system, this expensive high-tech intervention, would just fail without that person at the bedside.
It would. The background research pretty much confirms that. Without the continuous expert vigilance of the bedside nurse, the entire system, it will inevitably fail. It just underscores how crucial this constant hands-on problem-solving role is.
Okay, let's unpack this. And I think we should start with how the researchers even approached this problem. Because I think their method really clarifies just how rare this documented evidence truly is.
It's a very rigorous process.
Yeah, this wasn't just a quick search online. They conducted this massive, comprehensive search across four major databases: PubMed, CNAL, Scopus, and Web of Science. They're looking for like the entire historical footprint of this topic.
And critically, that search ran from the very beginning of these databases. I mean, the earliest records available all the way up to May 2025. So this wasn't just a snapshot. They really tried to cover the entire history of modern critical care literature on this specific subject.
That is casting a very wide net. So
Yeah.
what exactly were they trying to pull out of that historical net? What was the focus?
They were looking for any study, really, formal or informal, that reported on nursing care for adult individuals with cardiogenic shock.
Okay, adults specifically.
Right. Adults who were receiving some form of MCS within an intensive or critical care environment. So a very specialized population getting treated with very specialized technology.
And here's the finding that I think tells the real story of that evidence gap we mentioned. Despite that huge, decades-long four-database search, only 10 studies. 10. That's all that ultimately met their strict inclusion criteria.
10. That number should really shock you. It underscores why this specific scoping review is so valuable. It took these 10 scattered sources, which came from all over the world, different clinical contexts,
Yep.
and it synthesized them to finally give us a formal definition of this essential role. The goal was really just to articulate what every single nurse in this field already knows they do every day.
So from those 10 sources, the thematic analysis identified what we can basically call the job description, four primary domains of nursing intervention that are required to keep these patients alive.
Yeah, and the foundation of everything is the first one, continuous monitoring.
Domain one.
This is where the nurse, really earns their money, so to speak. But the review makes a crucial distinction. It's not just about monitoring the patient. It is dual-focused monitoring.
Dual focused. Okay, explain that. What does that actually look like on the bedside monitor?
Well, the nurse has to constantly track both the patient's hemodynamic parameters, that's how the body's responding, and the device-specific parameters, how the machine itself is functioning.
So two separate things at the same time.
Constantly. When we say hemodynamics, we're talking about things like central venous pressure, CVP, mean arterial pressure, MAP, basically making sure the organs are getting enough blood.
And on the other side of the screen, what are the device parameters they're tracking?
That's like the engine diagnostics for the MCS circuit. they're monitoring pump speed, which is often in revolutions per minute, or RPM, the flow rate in liters per minute, and the pressure gradients across the whole circuit.
Wow.
And those numbers are this constant barometer. They tell you if the circuit might be clotting, if an air bubble is forming, or if the cannulas, those are the tubes going into the patient, if they're getting dislodged.
Wait a second. So they are not just checking the patient's heart rate and blood pressure. They are simultaneously managing the flow rate, the RPM, and the pressures of a machine the size of a small suitcase.
Yes.
That truly sounds like two full-time jobs running in parallel.
It is. It really is. They are the ultimate bottleneck for safety because the absolute slightest deviation in flow or a sudden change in pressure can immediately lead to a catastrophic failure.
And speaking of catastrophic failures, that monitoring is only half the battle. So they're watching for the machine to fail, but they're also actively fighting the three most common complications that the technology itself can introduce.
And that brings us to domain two, complication prevention and management.
Right. And the big risks that the sources call out are hemorrhage, thromboembolism, and infection.
Mm-hmm. The very mechanical nature of this kind of circulatory support makes all three of those exponentially more likely.
Let's break down the why on that, because it seems kind of contradictory. How can you have a massive risk of bleeding and clotting at the same time?
It's a battle of pure physics and pharmacology. To stop the patient's blood from clotting the machine, that's the thromboembolism risk, they have to be on extremely potent anticoagulation medication.
Okay, blood thinners.
Very powerful ones. But that medication, by its very definition, raises the risk of life-threatening bleeding, either internal or external. That's the hemorrhage risk.
So the nurse's job is to walk this tightrope.
A razor's edge. They're managing these complex anticoagulation drips, often adjusting the dose every 15 to 30 minutes based on lab values, like something called the activated clotting time or ACT.
That is a level of minute-by-minute chemical titration that, frankly, most physicians are not directly performing. The nurse is effectively the real-time pharmacologist.
Precisely. And then you have that third factor.
Yeah.
Infection. Those cannulas, they create direct lines from the outside world straight into the patient's bloodstream and heart.
A direct highway for bacteria.
Absolutely. So maintaining just absolute sterile technique around those insertion sites is completely non-negotiable. And the nurse is the only one there, 24/7, who can maintain that sterile field.
So once they're stabilizing the device and actively preventing those three huge catastrophic failures, we get to the reality of the patient just lying in the bed.
Mm-hmm.
This leads us into domain three.
Right. Delivery of supportive care. The heart might be getting help from a machine, but the rest of the body is still critically ill.
And the nurse has to manage all of that.
Yes. This is where the nurse manages the patient's entire systemic stability, not just their failing heart. The review specifically lists managing sedation levels, so keeping the patient calm and comfortable while they're on a ventilator, ensuring the ventilation itself is working properly, maintaining adequate nutrition, usually through tubes, and maybe most complex of all, tightly controlling fluid balance.
Why is fluid balance so particularly challenging in these patients?
Because the whole reason they're in this situation, cardiogenic shock, is that the heart can't pump effectively. So if you give them too much fluid, you overwhelm that already failing system. You cause dangerous swelling in the lungs and everywhere else.
Okay.
But if you remove too much fluid, you risk the blood getting too thick and clotting the MCS circuit.
Another tightrope.
It's a constant juggling act. The nurse is watching inputs and outputs, assessing urine, managing complex diuretic drips, all just to try and maintain this perfect equilibrium in a body that is fundamentally out of balance.
So they're managing the holistic response of the critically ill person who just happens to be connected to this advanced machine. They're coordinating every single input and output.
And that coordination, that need for consistency, brings us to the fourth domain. This one is maybe the most structural, and it points directly toward the path for improvement.
And that would be domain four. We could call this one sticking to the script, right? Why protocol-guided care is just the definition of safety here.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yeah. This domain speaks directly to the need for standardization. When a patient is getting this level of complex minute-by-minute care, you just cannot afford variability based on which nurse happens to be working that shift.
In a high-risk, high-tech environment like this, what does a good protocol actually do? What does it provide?
The review found that protocols are absolutely essential to standardize interventions to make sure every nurse on the unit approaches anticoagulation management or cannula dressing changes or emergency response in exactly the same way.
So it's a playbook.
It's the only thing that keeps chaos at bay when a crisis hits, like a sudden alarm from the circuit or a massive bleed. That protocol is like the conductor score in a crashing orchestra.
Okay, so we've mapped this essential multifaceted role, the dual monitoring, the active complication management, the comprehensive supportive care, and that protocol-guided action. The sheer difficulty of the job is undeniable.
Right.
But the main conclusion of the review is that despite this critical role, there's a significant, persistent structural problem that's preventing optimal outcomes.
And that structural problem is the major takeaway for you, the listener. It really exposes the gap between individual effort and institutional support. The review clearly states two major gaps are identified: persistent variability in practice and a definite lack of standardized models.
Variability in practice. What does that actually look like? Does that mean nurses are just inventing their own procedures?
Not inventing so much as adapting. Because that evidence base is so tiny, remember those 10 studies, individual units or even individual nurses in the same hospital, they might be using different techniques for monitoring flow, different thresholds for reporting a pressure change,
nice,
or different, you know, homegrown anticoagulation guidelines. And this inconsistency, it introduces risk. Patient safety thrives on predictability. If the whole care team isn't working from a unified plan, errors just multiply.
So it's a difference between knowing what to do and having a consistent, documented, and reliably trained way to do it everywhere, every time.
Exactly.
So based on those gaps, what did the review suggest as immediate, actionable things for clinical practice?
Well, the clinical relevance section gave some very specific, clear pathways for improvement. And it reinforced that the solutions have to be systemic, not just about individual nurses trying harder.
Okay, what's the first one?
First, they emphasize the need to reinforce nurse training and to codify the existing knowledge into evidence-based protocols. Basically, if the global evidence is thin, then the localized clinical expertise has to be leveraged and formalized into training models.
So institutionalize the best practices you can find from those 10 studies and from the experts you already have on staff. What's the second major implication for the institutions themselves?
That one speaks directly to resources and continuity of care. It's about ensuring adequate staffing. I mean, you simply can't maintain that level of continuous dual monitoring and complex titration with not enough people.
Right. You can't be in two places at once.
Exactly. But beyond just having enough bodies, they stress that structured competencies and standardized documentation are necessary to enhance that continuity.
Structured competencies. That sounds like formalizing the skill set.
It is. It means having a rigorous audited process that confirms a nurse is competent in all four of these domains before they're ever assigned to an MCS patient.
Yeah, and the documentation.
Standardized documentation just ensures that when the nursing shift changes, the incoming nurse doesn't have to piece together a bunch of fragmented notes. They have a clear, consistent, universal record of both the patient's and the device's status.
And that, I think, really drives home the relevance for the listener. Why should you care so deeply about standardization and documentation in an ICU? Because in these life or death scenarios, with this complex tech, that standardization, those structured competencies, that clear documentation, it directly translates into predictable, safer patient outcomes.
It's literally the difference between a patient crashing because a complication was missed due to inconsistent monitoring versus a complication being prevented because a clear, standardized protocol was followed instantly. The review, it's defined these critical responsibilities across the four domains, and in doing that, it highlights the structural urgency of addressing all this variability.
So this deep dive really mapped the essential nursing role in cardiogenic shock and MCS patients, the continuous monitoring, complication management, supportive care, and protocol-guided action. The role is the system's anchor, and the need for a standardized structural support is now clearer than ever.
It really creates this fascinating tension, doesn't it? Between the rapid pace of technological innovation and the necessary foundational structures of training and standardization that you need to safely use that technology.
Which brings us to our final provocative thought for you to mull over. If standardized models and formalized education are the undisputed keys to patient safety in these high-tech, high-risk environments, what happens when the specialized technology itself, these complex MCS devices, are approved and deployed faster than the supporting care protocols and educational infrastructure can possibly keep up?
That's a great question.
I mean, if the new devices get FDA approval in 18 months, but the training protocols and the formalized competencies take, say, 5 years to fully develop and disseminate, who is standing between the patient and the unforeseen complication in that 3-year safety gap?
That structural question, it demands a proactive institutional answer, and a global one, really. It's about ensuring that we value the human element just as highly as we value the mechanical one.
We'll see you at the next deep dive.